So we're continuing this exploration of compassion and love. Love can break your fall. You just think of that in terms of we teach that God is love, that God, that in that way, God is breaking our fall, right? The pain that we experience as human beings. Charles Fillmore, the co-founder of Unity, taught, as I've already mentioned, that love is the great harmonizer and healer, that whoever calls on God for healing is calling on divine love. And, of course, love is at the core of compassion, right? We have this, somewhere along the line in parenting, a parenting class, I got this quote that stays on my mirror. It was for parenting, but it's great for yourself as well. When it's hardest to love me harder. Usually children, when they're acting out, they need something. And it's up to us to recognize that and not act out back. That's the whole thing about parenting classes. And so can we do that for ourselves, right? When something's going on for us that we don't even like about ourselves, can we find a way to support ourselves? It doesn't mean that we just let ourselves get away with bad behavior, right? Actually, by meeting it with love and compassion, we can actually address and be responsible for the ways we may be acting that are causing us or others harm. So I've been reading this material by Drs. Kirsten Neff and Christopher Germer, who've done all this interesting research around self-compassion, which compassion literally translates as suffering with, right? Not taking on the suffering, but being present and being a supportive presence and doing something perhaps to help alleviate the suffering. And so when we do that, when we offer ourselves self-compassion, we are turning toward our suffering and doing something in terms of how we handle ourselves to help alleviate that suffering. And we talked last week about all the misconceptions we have about self-compassion. See, you're going to want to come every week. Welcome. Come on in. The number one misconception, is that if we let go of our harsh, critical self-criticism, we won't get where we want to be in life. That somehow that is a motivation to achieve. And the research really shows the exact opposite, that when we're hard on ourselves, we experience greater fear of failure, greater levels of anxiety, and even depression. And it's helpful to know, I think it's helpful to talk about this and to know that we are not alone in this experience. One of the quotes says that criticizing ourselves, isolating ourselves, and getting stuck in rumination when things go wrong is pretty instinctive to all of us. And this is interesting. I'm going to show you some of the science behind it and how it really relates to what we're teaching here. So Drs. Kirsten Neff and Christopher Germer began with the work of Paul Gilbert, who created compassion-focused therapy, in which he concluded, this is where it's going to get interesting, going to get a little technical, but it's going to be very interesting, I promise, where he concluded that when we criticize ourselves, we're tapping into our body's threat defense system, which is a function of our reptilian brain, the oldest part of our brain that's namely for our physical survival. This means that self-criticism is often among the many ways that we can react to perceived danger, the threat defense system is the quickest and most easily triggered. What is it? Fight, flight, or freeze, right? The threat defense system evolved so that when we perceive a threat, the part of our brain that registers danger gets activated, triggers adrenaline and cortisol, and fight, flight, or freeze kicks in. This is where it gets interesting. They said, this works well for protecting against physical threats, but nowadays, most of the threats we face are challenges to our self-image and self-concept. Think about that. Some aspect of our identity is threatened. I mean, hopefully the majority of you do not live in physical threat, right? But we can feel threatened by others, other political parties, other people, right in our family, somehow pushing into who we think we are and who they should think we are and who we really are. I mean, it's fascinating. So the catch is, with self-criticism, we are both the attacked and the attacker. When we feel inadequate, somehow our self-concept is threatened, so we attack the problem, which is ourself. In this self-critical cycle. So Dr. Kirsten Neff, I love this. She says, when the stress response is triggered by a threat to our self-concept, we are likely to turn on ourselves in what she calls an unholy trinity of reaction: self-criticism, isolation, and rumination. So that fight, flight, or freeze becomes, fight becomes self-criticism. Flight expresses as isolation. We think we're all alone. We retreat. And freeze as rumination. We just ruminate on what we've done wrong, and what's wrong with us, and where. Well, that's fun, isn't it? Joy, joy, joy. So it's triggering that old part of our brain. In contrast, compassion, as they've studied, including self-compassion, is linked to the mammalian care system. So they say that being compassionate to ourselves when we feel inadequate makes us feel safe and cared for, like a child held in a warm embrace. And practically speaking, this helps to down-regulate that threat response. So now we are not fight, flight, or freeze. We're calming that down and offering some care, some warmth, in order to address whatever this is that has us feeling this way. So the conclusion is that practicing self-compassion deactivates the threat defense system and activates the care system. When we are struggling in some way, when some part of our identity is threatened, we can care for ourselves rather than attack ourselves. And you know what? Then we also can recognize, is this identity really true? And am I grounded in the truth of my spiritual identity? How does that line up? I want to share this interesting quote about what that even is. You know, I have to find it. Oh, gosh, darn it. Okay. I found this quote, this reading by a sister, Catherine Nerney. That Richard Rohr is getting me to really appreciate the Catholics. They're doing some great progressive work. She talks about writes about God's maternal love and compassion for the world. She says that in Exodus 34, verse 6, God proclaims that God is compassionate and gracious, slow to anger and abounding in steadfast love. According to God's own self-revelation, God's very being is determined by rahim, which is mercy, loving kindness, and compassion. Translations of the Hebrew most carefully connect this term rahim with the feminine, or womb. God's way of being poured out into the world is womb love. A womb provides a safe holding place for life to grow. Let this space which God provides for all become in you a sacred spot an expansive opening in your heart where God and you can indwell. You in God and God in you. As a child lives within her mother and the mother gives over her very blood for her child, so the God of life, compassion itself, gives life to our world. So when we think of, you know, God is not forgiving. God is the essence of forgiveness itself. And we have access to that if we believe that we are expressions of that one life source. Can we turn that depth toward ourselves as well? When we give ourselves compassion, our hearts open and we feel less defensive. Now, I should say that there's an important disclosure around that. If you're really serious about learning more about this mindful, self-compassionate technique, that as you offer yourself more compassion and your heart opens, you might feel some big feelings. It's often true that old wounds that we haven't been able to really hold emerge. And can we hold them in ourselves? Continue to hold that in love and compassion. But there is a warning, you know, if you are experiencing or have experienced great trauma or are just feeling mentally unstable, to tread lightly in that, and maybe even have some support as you open your heart, right? Because you can get overwhelmed with what is there. But that is not the reason not to do it. Because if we don't open our heart, you know, it can be scary to open to some of the pain and the disappointment. But in the same way, if we don't do that, we're kind of thwarted in experiencing the joy, the depth of joy and the depth of life. And so we can trust this God as love to support us in that process. I have found that to be true. But I have to be open to it. I don't just get to say how it's going to go my way. This is how it's going to go. It doesn't always work that way. So let's circle back around to consider what trips this whole process off in our reptilian brain, a perceived threat to our self-image, our self-concept in some way. And I want to clarify what is meant in this context by self-image. Self-concept. Our self-concept involves how you see yourself, how you think about yourself, and how you feel about yourself. And self-image is one concept, one component of that overall concept. Self-image refers to the way we perceive or think about of ourselves and the way we interpret others to perceive or think about ourselves, as well as the way we would like to be, the ideal sense of ourselves. This is the quote I was looking for. Identity is also a closely related concept, but is larger and more comprehensive than self-image. Identity is our overall idea of who we are. And this quote is telling. As a self-concept and self-esteem expert, Roy Baumeister puts it, the term identity refers to the definitions that are created for and superimposed on the self. Some of them aren't even true. It's the ways that we come to identify who we are as individuals that is different. Our young people are pushing through that wholeheartedly with their gender identity. That feels too constrictive. So in other words, identity is the whole picture of who we believe we are and who we tell ourselves and others we are. And so my question is, who do you say that you are? What is the foundation of your identity? You're here today, I believe, in some capacity to know the depth of your true identity is divine. Can you feel how identifying with that first and foremost in every situation empowers you in a whole different way. In a real practical way. So I'll give you an example. It's not exactly about compassion, but it could be. You could see it. I had to have a little skin. Apparently, as my doctor friend says, the bumps and barnacles of aging that start popping up. What is happening? What is this? Oh, it hurts. Oh, yeah, it's a little, some kind of cancer, but not like, but so they got to take it off, right? And the thing was like this big. And they start telling me about internal stitches and external stitches as I'm laying there and the needles are going in. And I didn't really think much of it, you know, until I got there. Heidi was like, do you want me to drive you? I said, no, I can do this. And then all of a sudden there's tugging. And then there's the smell of burning flesh as they cauterize it. And I'm brave, I'm strong. And then they start talking about caring for it, you know, and I started to kind of feel a little nauseous and felt like I just went down this whole thing of if it gets infected and then they've got to scrub it out, it's going to hurt so bad, I can't. And I was like sweating. And then I said, my body, the life force is working through my body right now to heal it, to mend it. My heart rate went down. I didn't throw up. I mean, so it had a, you know what I mean? It's that practical. I still have to deal with it. It's ugly. It hurts a little bit. But I'm not in the rabbit hole of how it's going to go wrong and I'm going to lose my leg, which is where I was headed. So grounding in, what is true? What is the highest truth I can conceive of? That divine life is living through my body and it is orchestrating this magical, mysterious, wonderful process that our body knows what to do. And I want to empower that. That's one example. And so the invitation is when we're feeling defeated, when we're suffering from a failure of some type, centering in our divine identity, centering in the love that God is within us, initiates the ultimate care response. Again, co-founder Charles Fillmore, Unity co-founder Charles Fillmore, taught that love is the pure essence of being that binds together the whole human family. Of all the attributes of God, love is undoubtedly the most beautiful. In divine mind, love is the power that joins and binds in divine harmony the universe and everything in it. It's the great harmonizing principle. And so as we, you know, offer ourselves some care and kindness, we can actually face difficult things more steadily. Charles Fillmore also taught that God does not love anybody or anything. God is the love in everybody and everything. God is love. Humanity becomes loving by permitting that which God is to find expression in word and action. God is the love in everybody and everything. Humanity becomes loving by permitting that which God is to find expression in our words and our thoughts and our deeds. And so prayer and affirmation, as we've been learning, is the highest form of that, putting our mind in that direction of that love that resides within each one of us and is imbued in all of creation. And so we'll take some time now to center in that love. I'm going to ring the singing bowl now as an invitation to drop from your head to your heart. I've given you a lot to think about, so just take a breath. And Ryan's going to sing us into a time of prayer centered in compassion and forgiveness.
I forgive me everything that I am holding on to. I let go, I surrender, I surrender. I'm ready for my change. I'm ready for my change.
So just invite you to take a deep breath. Feel the ground supporting you and the chair behind your back. As you just let your breath calm your physical body and slow your mind. And with it, each inhalation is an invitation to connect more deeply with the love that you are. Just inviting this time of connection. Feeling the air on your face, experience of your physical body. Noticing that while you feel the experience in your body, you are also more than that experience. We're dropping into that sense of being. There's nothing to do. Just be. And because our mind likes to think, we give it something juicy to focus on in this time. I offer you an affirmation. I am the power of love. Loving. You may focus on that, repeat that in your mind. I am the power of love, loving. And we let that permeate all aspects of our awareness. And as our mind wanders, we bring it back gently. I am the power of love, loving. And in the silence, just open up to receive a deeper understanding of that idea, how it may serve you. I am the power of love, loving. And from that place, centered in that love, can you offer yourself this prayer? May I be gentle and loving to myself when I need it most. When it feels hard to love me, can I call upon divine love even harder? I am the power of love, loving. Right here, right now. May I trust that as the truest part of my identity that can never be threatened. And for all that I am in God, in love, and all that I continue to learn and know and feel into, I am grateful. I let myself be, and so it is.
Let's sing that.
I forgive me everything that I've been holding on to. I let go. I surrender. I surrender. I'm ready for my change.
Say, I forgive me.
I forgive me. I forgive.